Small businesses are the cornerstones of our local communities, and small business owners are hardworking and passionate people who are chasing down their ambitions while there's a lot on the line. So, let Verizon champion your small business dreams. Whether you own a small business, are scaling one, or starting one from scratch, you need Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon business experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon business expert. Plus, Verizon business experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon, well, they've got you back. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/small business.
So why do you want to learn a new language?
I'll tell you why. Because ¿dónde está el baño? Can be a very important question at times. You know, Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. Fast track your language acquisition with immersive lessons designed to teach you to pick up languages in a natural way. I love the fact that I can go from my laptop to my phone to pretty much anywhere and learn the language of my choice. Not to mention, I'm bringing my communication skills to new heights. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a limited time, StarTalk Radio listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/starttalk. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/starttalk today.
I'm Gary O'Reilly.
And I'm Chuck Nice.
And this is Playing with Science. Life, it seems, is full of mountains. Some we conquer, some we don't. And then for some of us, one is not enough. We have to find more.
Yes, that would be 7 to be exact. Each the highest mountain on each of the 7 continents. And because it's still not enough, some of us have to do it quicker than anyone else before them.
Our special guest today is a rock star of the highest order. Vanessa O'Brien is the owner of the 7 Summits world record, but even that was not enough. She has conquered K2, and this is the scariest stat I think I've ever said. The mountain that claims 1 in 4 who attempt it. And she has skied the last degree at both poles, no doubt just for kicks and giggles. As we know, though, summiting is incredibly dangerous for your health. Yeah, really, no kidding. So, Chuck, if you had to pick, who would be your best mountain guide?
I'm going to go with God himself, because that's the only way you will find me on a mountain. It will be a cold day in hell. Oh. No, actually, I want somebody who's a trained physician, especially a medical emergency trained physician with a good bedside manner. And who better to be that than Dr. Alan Oram, who is one of only 2 currently registered in the USA. He will no doubt, along with his medical know-how, be bringing us insight into high-altitude science.
Yes, but before we get to the good doctor, let's meet our very special guest, shall we? I said she is a rock star of the highest order, and you knew exactly what I meant by that. Vanessa O'Brien. Wow.
It is so great to have you here.
Nice to be here. How are you guys?
I got
to
tell you, I'm
Explorer of the Year.
Explorer of the Year. Fantastic.
Yeah.
You're just, first of all, so I spent so much time on YouTube watching you and the climb and all the footage of you. And, you know, I have to say that it is, I was cold and tired, exhausted and hurt after watching the video. It is a monumental undertaking, any summit. So I'm going to ask you, everybody says K2 is the hardest. So I'm going to go completely opposite. What's the easiest?
Well, so of these seven summits, the easiest is probably Kosciuszko, and that's in Australia.
Australia, yes.
That's Australia. So that is, and you mentioned seven summits. So right there, I'll have to hedge and say there's really eight.
There's really eight.
And that's because there's two sets of seven summits, and what I like to call the CYA seven summits. Mm-hmm. So there's a seventh summit choice for the seven summits.
Okay.
Based on two lists. There's the Bass list and the Messner list.
Okay.
The Bass list is based on Richard Dick Bass, who was a businessman, who was the first to come up with the concept of the seven summits. He was a layman, looked out at a map of the world, naturally looked and chose, when looking at continents, Australia as the seventh summit, and therefore Kosciuszko, which is 7,310 feet,
mm-hmm.
not much larger than Mount Washington.
Okay.
Messner, being a mountaineer, looked at Australia and said it would take longer to fly there than to climb it and wouldn't really waste his time. So he developed a notion of Oceania or Australasia and therefore chose Kirsten's Pyramid mm-hmm. as the seventh summit. Therefore, the CYA, which you know stands for...
Cover your ass.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to say it.
Or, yeah.
So, but yes, so if you want to do both lists, you would effectively do eight.
Right. So where's Kirsten's Pyramid?
That's Western New Guinea, which is Papua. So it's the old Irian Jawa.
Cool.
And they're quite different because that's 16,050 feet. So imagine 7,000, 16,000. And the Messner list of Kirsten's Pyramid, he introduced the only rock climbing.
Okay.
In the Seven Summits series. So very, very different choice of...
Different challenge altogether.
So,
let's go back to the beginning. You weren't born a rock climber. You weren't born a mountaineer, I'm guessing. You wake up one morning and say, I'm doing it. I'm going to be a mountaineer. It's Everest. It's K2. Whatever you got, bring it on. Then what happens? You can't just say, I've packed my bag, I'm off, I'll see you in a year.
Mm-hmm.
How do you go about the process of preparing? Because
you make your way down to the local playground and start on the monkey bars? Ooh. I mean...
So there's book knowledge, right, that we can all gain through research, knowledge, you know, and that's great. Everybody should undertake that. That's for free. Then there is experiential knowledge. You have to go out and do it. You have to make those mistakes. There aren't courses per se in mountaineering, the way you and I might take a course, in motor racing or something like that, in these car schools or something that teach you how to drive.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really work like that. So the best thing to do is really just sign up on for something where you have to go and put on that kit. You have to learn what a harness is. You have to learn what a helmet is. You have to learn what crampons are, how they work, and, you know, just start to use them and start to make those mistakes.
So, not the bad ones.
Well, you hope that by the time you get into a bad situation, you have accumulated knowledge and experience where you're not going to, you know, blow it or do something too dangerous.
So what is the appeal? Once you've, I want to say mastered, once you've got a grip, literally, on a lot of the things you need to know, what's the thrill? What's the appeal? What's the drive behind wanting to summit one of these big peaks?
Well, I don't know really of much. I don't know of anything that's a harder challenge. It's kind of, man versus nature. It's much more than physical. It's a mental, mental, spiritual, physical. It's like everything that could possibly be put on the table is out there with that challenge. There's nothing that I know of that you can do otherwise that can really give you that entire challenge in your life. So there's no assignment at work that you can be given, let's say, that can stimulate you in that same way.
Does each mountain teach you something different about you?
Yeah, it teaches you something different about you, about your teams, about how you work with others, nature. It teaches you something, all sorts of things, you know, that, you know, depending on your experience and what happens.
So when you talk about, so the K2 summit, you are the first woman to successfully summit. And by successful, I mean to go up and return, because...
Incorrect.
No. Oh, really?
You said first woman. That's not true. I'm the 50th woman and the first American and
oh,
British
I'm sorry.
Woman.
The first American and British woman.
Correct.
Right.
Here's the stat, Chuck. There are more women who've gone to space than have summited K2.
Correct. Wow. Three times more.
How's that? Does that kind of put things in perspective?
That's pretty incredible.
So 150 women have been to space.
Right.
And only
50. Have actually summited.
Me too.
Right. And now but there are American women that have come before you that have reached the top, right?
No.
Never.
Never.
Okay. So who
there were two British women who got to the top and died
and they died at the top. Oh.
Which is why I said that one in four.
Yep. So that was Julie Tullis and Alison Hargreaves.
Right.
And it does show that, you know, it's a very dangerous pursuit because, you know, 85% of deaths happen on the way down. So that's right. Not just K2, though. That could be any 8,000-meter peak.
I was going to say they say the same thing about Everest as well. It's not getting up. It's getting down. Right. That's really the – why is that? Why is it that – because you think that there's intuitively – mm-hmm. It would seem that there's less energy needed to get down. It would seem that there's less, you exert yourself less. I mean, and that's only because all of us have climbed a tree when we were a kid.
Yep.
And we know how hard it was to get up there. And then, you know, getting down is not the hard part.
Okay. So
why?
So we're playing with science. So let's take a step back.
Okay.
Thank you.
Let's go with the air we breathe.
Mm-hmm.
Take a breath.
We're in New York. I'd rather not take a breath.
But we're in the studio. It could be safer.
Absolutely.
All right. So whether you're on the radio with us now or whether you're in the studio now, 78% of the air we breathe is what?
Oxygen.
No.
Pollution.
It is a gas.
It's nitrogen, right?
Nitrogen, yes. Correct. 78% of the air we breathe is nitrogen. 21.9% is... I'll give you a vowel. Oxygen.
Right.
Okay. So that's primarily the two things. There's trace gases for the rest. It's argon, CO2, everything else.
Right.
That is the air we breathe. That is the same at sea level as it is on the top of Everest.
Mm-hmm.
So what changes?
Go ahead.
Something changes, but it's not the composition of air.
Right.
What changes is pressure.
Okay.
So the higher we climb, the lower the atmospheric pressure.
Okay.
So when we're sitting here, there's lots and lots of these molecules. And when we take a breath, there's lots of molecules that enter our system. When we're at the top of the mountain, all these molecules are so spread apart.
Stretched out.
That's why you see a climber take one breath. One molecule comes in. They're huffing and puffing. Another molecule comes in, huffing and puffing.
Mm-hmm.
More painful than watching golf.
So it's funny because what you just said there and is really fascinating because most people say when you climb a mountain, there's no oxygen up there. Into thin air. There's no oxygen up there. But you're saying the mixture is the same.
Mixture's the same. The reason it's thin air is because the
pressure
is pushing the molecules apart.
Gotcha.
And therefore, it's the composition's the same. It's just that these molecules are now
so your body's working harder to bring that in.
You're under exertion, of course.
Right.
But here, you know, if I were to draw like all these molecules like really close together, now pressure spread them all apart. You're just not getting
right. You're not getting it.
You're not getting it.
Wow.
So now, what does the body do? Because the body is very clever. You're going higher, and it's sensing you don't have what you need.
Mm-hmm. The oxygen tank out.
No, it's building red blood cells.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so it goes into an automatic defense mechanism.
Hemoglobin starts producing more and more red blood cells naturally.
Gotcha.
Now, where have we heard this before? Blood blank.
Doping?
Yes. Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
Blood doping.
How did you go there straight away?
Wow.
Because you know how I feel about
exactly.
Doping.
Exactly.
So it's free, it's natural, and right. It's necessary.
Right.
We're getting this EPO, which is, you know, completely natural. It's stimulated by the kidneys. This is something that mountaineers are getting as we climb higher, mm-hmm. naturally stimulated, and this is what we're getting is the nice red blood cells to help us with this oxygen deprivation.
Okay.
The problem is that this thick oxygen that's now in our blood system is really, really thick and puts us at twice the risk for a heart attack and stroke. Okay, something good, but there's a shadow, and that shadow is that thickness, right? So we work really, 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 really hard to get to the top, give all this energy to get there, and people will say, hey, you know, sometimes people burn all that, you know, energy to get there, and they don't leave that reserve. So when that 85% statistic comes in, they've given everything thinking that the summit is the goal. The summit is never the goal.
Right.
It's round trip return.
Round trip return. Got it.
Right? Yeah. No, no.
Because there's no point.
We're pre-programmed to get to the top of the mountain. That's it. End of story.
But that's never the goal. The goal is return trip, round trip return.
Obviously,
because, yeah. And Hillary, you know, Srem and Hillary fought this for years. You know, unless you returned, there was no point. There was no point because there was no one to tell the tale.
We will take a break now, but don't panic. Vanessa O'Brien will still be with us after this break.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me, too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me, too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
Do you want to set up your child for success? Of course you do. Maybe you want to save money on private tutoring, or maybe it's just out of your budget altogether. Is this a big school year for your child? Like maybe they're starting kindergarten, middle school, or high school, or some other milestone. Maybe your family moved and they're starting at a new school. Is your child ahead? Not getting challenged enough in class? Well, we love that little smarty, but we want them to be engaged. IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids covering math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed to help them really understand and master topics in a fun way. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid, no matter the age or the personality. There's one site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Kids can use it at home on the computer or on the go through the app on your phone or your tablet. No more grading those worksheets. IXL grades everything itself. And no more trying to figure out how to explain math equations or grammar rules yourself. IXL has built-in explanation videos. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Star Talk Radio listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/StarTalk. Visit IXL.com/StarTalk to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Welcome back. You're listening to Playing with Science, and this is our very special mountaineering show. And we are honored to have the extraordinary Vanessa O'Brien as our special guest. Now, just before the break, we got stuck into what it takes to be a top mountaineer. Even before you get to base camp, you've got to not only prepare yourself, but as a team leader, as you were and are, past tense, present tense, how do you select your team? What are the key factors for you strategizing to build a team that you know will successfully summit and come back again?
So I have never been fortunate enough to select a team because of funding. In most cases, their sponsorship does not really exist in high-altitude mountaineering.
That makes sense.
Because it is deemed too high risk.
Of course. I mean, listen, think about it. I'm a Nissan, right? And I want to sponsor your team, and I make a big to-do out of it, and then you frickin' die. I just wasted a lot of money because I can't say a word to anybody.
But think about it also, there's no better way to get that message. Being number one, getting to the top, the hard work that goes into, you know, Driven to Explore, which happened to be one of Mercedes' sponsorships at a mountain.
Right.
You know, the thing is, I'm putting my brand, hard-earned brand loyalty, brand value,
100%.
Up there, and I'm rolling a dice.
No.
But it's a big risk, but it's a big payoff,
Big payoff, and that's the point. Again. Risk and reward payoff, right? The higher the risk, the higher the reward.
Absolutely. Now,
however, people never talk about mitigating risk.
Okay.
So here's how you would mitigate the risk is what you publish and when you publish it. You would capture everything. Of course you would. But if you were really risk averse, you wouldn't publish a single thing until that expedition was finished.
Right.
And then everything would go into production.
Right.
If you were very risk averse.
Right.
Uh-huh. You would never not capture it.
Of course.
If you weren't risk averse, like I had a play with credit cards where every camp you would pick a name and pay off a credit card bill, let's say. How fun, because you get your entire, customer base involved, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Now, something like that can be very consumer-driven and a lot of fun, but now you're 100% vested and engaged, so you are open to taking the risk with the consumer.
Did you guess that Vanessa has a background in finance?
Now, okay, but putting all that stuff aside.
Okay.
Now, the problem with, these expeditions is there is one of economics.
Right.
So it takes X number of people to make a trip economically feasible.
Okay.
So what I mean by that is in choosing a team, it tends, without sponsorship, it tends to be the number of people looking to go.
Right.
And so people tend to be put together who have similar, like-minded goals and, want to do similar things.
Do they have to go through psychological testing and profiling before they get onto a team?
No, it's nothing like that.
No, okay.
No, I mean, it's...
So what are the credentials that are necessary? Like, for instance, if I just showed up, I was like, hey, so you guys climbing today? Like, that's...
Well,
you can't do that.
No,
right?
I mean...
You would have to have some credentials.
To get on a permit in either Nepal or Pakistan, this is the Karakoram in the Himalayas, you would have to have some climbing experience. So they are looking for every permit that they issue that every member has... at least climbed an 8,000-meter peak, let's say, if you're going to an 8,000-meter peak.
Okay.
This doesn't apply for the cooks or the base camp staff because they're just going to be walking,
Right, that's where they're staying. They're staying there. Okay, so now let me ask you this. What can you give us, when we think of teams, of course, this is a sports show, sports science show, but still sports. When we think of teams, we think of positions. Okay, and in football, you have a quarterback, you have a wide receiver, and you have a lineman, okay? In soccer, you have a striker, you have
a
forward.
Here,
so now, when your team, do you have positions, and what are they responsible for? What do you guys, how do you divvy up the responsibilities?
Yeah, I mean...
And what are the responsibilities?
No, I mean, we do. If the team has Sherpa or high-altitude porters, Those team members tend to go out and investigate the route, put in some of the fixed lines. Before, say, team members go up to, in advance of team members setting up camp. Mm-hmm. So, and that's because some of the there are some bottlenecks in some of these areas. So Hillary Step is a good one on Everest. Right. There's House's Chimney and the Black Pyramid on K2.
It sounds like a Harry Potter book.
It is, I know. So when you say bottleneck, this is like extremely narrow passages, right? And so I saw in your video at one point, there was like a single person passage that you were going through and you were all in a single file. It looked absolutely terrifying. It was not just climbing like you're mountain climbing, but it was also like rock climbing while you were mountain climbing. Do you know what that is? Would you be able to tell me where that was?
It could be one of two, three things. Okay. I mean, so sometimes on, and this does get a little bit into climate a little bit. So with climate change, a lot of these, so if you look at a mountain at a distance,
right,
it looks like it's full of snow.
Right.
But when you're actually on it, mm-hmm, it's full of rock. Mm. And unfortunately, over the years, with climate change, and I would prefer that word over, say, global warming.
Right.
These mountains are so high. How high are they? So let's talk about that. This is, let's say 8,000, 9,000 meters or 26 to 29,000 feet. This is at the very, very top of the troposphere. All weather takes place here and below. Mm-hmm. So, when you have these jet streams pounding on these mountains at 200, 300 miles an hour, first of all the snow is just getting ripped off. You've also got all these, really, really hot weather, sun baking on these mountains, melting all the snow and ice. So increasingly with, the climate change that's happening, you've got less and less snow and ice. When I talk to the old mountaineers from the 60s and 70s who are still alive, they simply say, thank God I'm not climbing this stuff now. Because I was wearing crampons and I had ice and snow. I have to wear crampons and I'm often having to wear crampons on rock, which is the wrong tool for the job.
Gotcha.
But I can't switch footwear.
Oh, crap.
Yeah, big crap.
Probably not what she said. Tell me you did. You're far too polite to say things
very
like
nice.
That. Halfway up a mountain. Oh, bang. So, I mean, what are you two? Okay.
So really to answer your question, it's very, very hard when there's a lot of rock and you're in these single file positions because the traffic is the same way up as it is down.
Oh.
So, and if you're at a really high altitude, you are stuck. If somebody's taking an hour to get up there, you're an hour behind them.
Oh,
what we are learning, well, I am most certainly,
is that I never want to do this.
But that we knew. and I might not be far behind you. Over the course of decades, mountains have changed because of the climate change. But I guess from a day-to-day basis, this thing almost has its own life force. And the mountain you start climbing at the beginning of the day isn't the mountain halfway through the day or at the end of the day.
Not at all.
How on earth do you plan for hour to hour to deal with basically what is a living rock?
Well, this is a big deal on Everest. Everest has that Khumbu icefall, which is the first thing out of base camp. So it's a 3,000-foot shifting maze of glacial ice that is constantly shifting and moving. So it becomes very dangerous.
Wow.
One, to get through it. Because
how many people turn around and go, oh, that's it, then forget it?
Well, there's been 16 people killed in one day towering Sirocs come down and get right on top of them. So it's probably the most dangerous part of the whole mountain, actually, is right at the beginning.
Yeah.
So that's, each mountain has its little idiosyncrasies. Now, funny enough, Everest this year had the highest number of summits ever on the record of history. In 2018, it had 700 summits. It surpassed 2013, I think was the previous record. So
almost sounds like there's a rush hour.
Well, 700 is a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of people in one.
A lot of people.
A lot of people in one season.
I've seen actual pictures of that where it looks like the people are lined up in a conga line going up.
Yeah.
And I say it's because, you know, in Nepal they have this, you know, this Sherpa community that they are so good at being able to take people up.
Yep.
And they, by the way, have the highest risk involved because they're always going before.
Yep.
And as a result, they are the most susceptible to avalanche.
Yep.
And you have a great many of the people in the community who are dying so that tourists can actually go up Everest, you know.
Yep. Now, I believe last year, the year before, they now allow equipment to be helicoptered up to Camp 1, so the Sherpa are not taking that equipment.
Thank God.
So there's a change that will have environmental effects, though, because, you know, I don't know that a helicopter.
It's probably helicopters don't belong up there.
Yeah.
But, you know, really what should happen is, and it's a shame that it's become such a part of their economy.
Yep.
But what should happen is we shouldn't be. People like you should be doing this. People like me who want to go to a cocktail party and talk about it shouldn't be doing this. Like mountaineers, I don't mind, you know, certain other people who are doing it for research, people who are doing it to write about it, like purposeful summiting, which I'll call it that, makes sense to me. But,
well, you know, a mountaineer starts somewhere. So I think it depends what your what your purpose is in wanting to do it, right?
Right.
So, you know, if somebody wants to really train hard and, you know, do it the right way, you know,
I don't have a problem with that.
I don't have a problem with that.
No, because you're making the commitment. That's what I'm saying. It's like if you're making the commitment, I'm talking about somebody who just, you know, like who wants to say, I did it.
Yeah.
I want you to do it just so as they can tell a story.
Yeah, so they can tell a story at a cocktail party.
I think
I got a little problem with that.
If it's
that's
on
all
a
I'm
bucket
saying.
List, then that's not a, that's not cool.
Gosh.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
Well, we got to take a break.
But
you're going to stay with us, right?
Absolutely.
And I got to read you this quote when we come back. I just want to get your, do you know this French alpinist? His name is Gaston Rebouffat. Rebouffat. Our producer is French. Johnny, is it Gaston Rebouffat? He went like this. Close enough, Rebouffat.
Lovely.
So anyway, he says
this.
Our
producer so hates you. Right now. Really hates you.
All right. So this is what he said. Mountains provide a mirror of stone and ice, a mirror which helps us know ourselves. Reaching a mountain summit requires that we confront the reflection we find in the stone mirror, working with all that is weak, lazy, and fearful within ourselves. Hmm. Do you agree with that?
I think that's a great quote. I know one I always go back to is Reinhold Messner, who says, mountains aren't fair or unfair, they're just dangerous.
Ooh, I like that. I have several girlfriends fit that description.
Well, you can substitute girlfriends for mountains then.
Oh, I already have.
And if Mrs. Nice is listening.
Are you kidding me? Mrs. Nice was the last one.
Oh. Gary's going to keep his mouth shut. Right, let's take that break. Vanessa O'Brien, the fabulous Vanessa O'Brien, will be with us and we'll be speaking to one of only two registered mountaineering guides who is a qualified physician, Dr. Alan Oram. That's all when we get back.
Rack your look for spring at Nordstrom Rack and save up to 60% on brands you love. Rag & Bone, Vince, Marc Jacobs, Adidas, Joe's, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. Score new dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and sunglasses, plus updates for the family and home. Get your spring on for less, up to 60% less, today at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen, remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah, of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Welcome back to Playing With Science. As you will be more than aware, if you've been listening from the beginning, and we do hope you are, Vanessa O'Brien, the lady who summited the seven summits faster than anyone else in the world, a Guinness World Record holder, is with us and still with us. But now we are honoured to have Dr. Alan Oram on the show, one of only two registered mountaineering guides
in the US.
In the US of A, that is a registered physician and, in particular, emergency
medicine physician.
Yeah. So, Doctor, welcome to Playing with Science. So, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
If you were actually on a mountain with a team, what is the most common sort of predicament or problem that you face? As far as you're concerned,
I help people with a variety of things. I think at altitude, the problems that most climbers experience do have to do with altitude. Some are obvious, some are less so. Injuries, I think, are pretty obvious, but the question about high altitude illness is, I think, probably the more common thing that I get calls about. Or often it may just be a text through satellite technology. But altitude, I think, is probably the most common issue that I have to deal with.
So with altitude, is that the AMS, this acute mountain sickness, or is that something different?
Acute mountain sickness is one of the common forms of altitude illness. There's also high altitude cerebral edema and high altitude pulmonary edema.
Mm-hmm.
Acute mountain sickness is more common, but you wouldn't die from AMS. High altitude pulmonary edema, it would be the thing that would really kind of do you in, as well as HACE or cerebral edema.
Vanessa, I mean, you've been there on a number of occasions. How do you self-manage yourself? Do you say, no, it's not a problem, I can get through this? Or do you have to go, I need to deal with this now? If you get this acute mountain sickness, if you get these conditions, how do you deal with these?
Well, I think, first of all, in the high-altitude medical kits, we do carry medicines, so things like dexamethasone, nifedipine, azetazolamide or Diamox. These are all tools in the toolkit, if you will, for emergencies if they occur. Hopefully, you don't have to use them, but they're there if you need them, you know. You have to remember, in many cases in the Himalayas or the Karakoram, we're miles and miles, 300 miles from, you know, the closest hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no helicopter rescue in places like Pakistan. You know, they don't have helicopters for hire, for example. They're fighting wars. You know, there's other uses for helicopters there.
Right.
So, you know, we have to be self-sufficient with the medicine. So... And believe it or not, there is other medicine like Viagra, which may sound funny to you, but
no, I've heard of that being used.
But that's it's a vasodilator, and
yes.
It's important because
you never know when things might get sexy on a mountain. Just saying.
Oh dear.
No.
Good time on the mountain.
Nope. There's never that. Trust me. People don't take.
You're getting voted off the mountain.
People don't take showers and. This is not a sexy time.
Sexy time on the mountain.
This sexy time.
Okay.
So, doctor.
But a vasodilator, by the way, actually increases blood flow. So that can be very important, especially when you're in a high altitude scenario. But go ahead.
No, so the doctor, can take it from there. But we need all those things because if the emergencies rise, then, We have them for if and when they occur.
So, Doc, let me ask you this. When it comes to injuries, falling, I would say, is something that you don't want to do while you're climbing.
But
people fall. and they injured themselves. So now that we're talking about these type of illnesses that can beset a person at these altitudes, these kind of altitude sicknesses, does one precipitate the other? Does the person get sick and they fall? Is that a common occurrence that the altitude sickness actually causes a person to fall? Like when somebody breaks a hip, it's normally your hip broke and then you fell. People think you broke a hip because you fell. Normally it's your hip broke and made you fall. So which one is more common? Is it just human error that causes a person to fall, or illness causes the person to fall?
I would say it's probably human error and movement, okay, or the lack of ability for people to move in a smooth fashion. Generally, at least on the bigger 8,000 meter peaks, a lot of those routes have fixed lines, so you're always attached to a rope, but sometimes you're not, and you can certainly fall and injure yourself. Does one lead to the other? I certainly think that fatigue and having headaches and AMS symptoms certainly can contribute, but I'm not so sure that there's, you know, one always begets the other. I think just simply falling because you can't move very well because of fatigue, elevation, crampons, icy surfaces. I think all those things contribute.
Cool. Okay.
Okay. While your pair of you are here, firstly, hypoxia, if you can explain, doctor, exactly what that is, and then sort of mine the fact of what is the science and the physiology behind this condition. So as I understand, as well as any of our listeners who don't already know.
Hypoxia is the lack of oxygen delivered to the body, whether that's through something central or peripheral. And so in high altitude illness, when we gain altitude, there's less available oxygen because of the low pressure, such that you're not breathing the normal amount of oxygen that you normally would, say at sea level. The effect of that is that your body has to work harder to do the work that it normally would have to do at altitude. And so the things that happen with hypoxia, at least to the body, are a combination of problems such as AMS, which can lead to cerebral edema, and then pulmonary edema as well, which is a type of edema that's related to hypoxia and elevated pressures in the pulmonary vessels in the heart.
So if you're the guide on a summit and you are obviously looking after your own self-interests, but you've a duty to the people you have with you, how difficult is it for you as a mountaineer and a doctor to manage those things in the best way?
That's a good question. I think that as a guide, I think you have to be very aware of how you feel and how you're performing at altitude. And the responsibility is to make sure that your safety is paramount. If you're not safe, your clients aren't safe. And so taking care of yourself either through medication or decision making, which may mean going down, may be prudent. And I think that's a tough thing, especially with ego, the finances, et cetera, to make that decision. As a physician, I think I tend to be very conservative when I'm climbing, and I will tend to pull back before I go forward if I'm not feeling right, if my decision-making and performance is off. I'm going to pay attention to that because of the safety of both myself and the team.
Interesting. Thank you for that.
Before you go on a climb, can you talk to us about the medical condition that a person wants to be in before they even attempt something like this? I mean, I would assume that there's a good and bad candidate for climbing. And what makes you a bad candidate?
Looking like you and I.
Believe me, if you put my face up to bad candidate, I will not be disappointed or offended.
I think that too is an excellent question, and one that I face frequently. Maybe not at very, very high altitude, but where I work here in the Tetons, I think people's perception of what they are about to do or what they want to do is different than reality. Meaning that people's fitness is definitely not always the best. Mm-hmm. And I think that when people come into these situations, they really have to decide, are they going to train or not? And it shouldn't be just a simple decision. It takes work. I'm sure Vanessa trained hard for all those all the peaks she did. Mm. Success is paramount to fitness.
And, wow. Okay, Vanessa, so is there fit and then is there mountain fit? And how do you get from one to the other?
Yeah, how do you train?
So it depends what I'm doing. So I think 8,000 meters is a little bit different because to me that's really about VO2 max and it's about the utilization of oxygen. Mm-hmm. So the best training for high altitude is really cardiovascular. Putting on muscle, a lot of muscle, will work against me. And what I mean by that is when oxygen is a limited resource, mm-hmm. the brain and the lungs must have that, and muscle will compete
right.
for that.
Right.
So I need to have the highest VO2 max I can possibly achieve and be the most cardiovascular fit. If I become Mr. Atlas or Schwarzenegger or something like that, I'm going to fail.
Because I can't get up the mountain.
Well, that muscle will compete for the oxygen.
Where did
I don't
that come
have.
From?
Get to the mountain. But go ahead.
Sorry, people.
Yeah. But now if I'm pulling sleds and I'm going to the North Pole, I need muscle.
Yes.
And I'm not climbing very high, so I'm training very, very differently for that.
Is it also to do with weight?
Interesting.
You got to haul that extra weight, albeit muscle.
Well, you're not.
Where if you're sledding, you're going horizontally, more or less.
It's very deceiving. When you're climbing really, really high altitude, you are not carrying a lot of weight, not as much weight as you think you are.
Mm-hmm.
You're carrying enough, you know, from that final camp, let's say, mm-hmm. you know, whatever camp you end up at, and there's, let's say it's 4 to summit. You know, if you're with oxygen, you know, oxygen might weigh, you know, 10 pounds, something like that. You've got maybe 2 water bottles, maybe a thermos, change of clothes. You're not carrying as much weight as you think you are.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but if you're pulling sleds, you are carrying a lot of weight.
What's the hardest part for you to get to a condition where you felt in control and comfortable?
Well, let me put it another way. You must show up in your best fitness self,
right,
on any endeavor, mm-hmm. which means, you know, that you have strength, that you have flexibility, you have good, a good core,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, you're not going to have a good balance in many occasions.
Mm-hmm.
So you must show up as your best fitness self.
Wow.
But you should understand what you're undertaking and the difference in training for that.
So that's the physicality. You don't just climb with your body. Surely you must engage a mental process. And not just, I'm seeing, I'm doing it. But, and the doctor can probably attest this, and he may have touched on it already. If I'm a complete nutcase and I turn up and say, I'm going to go and do this mountain thing, you know my mentality is nowhere near where it should be. Is it the kind of, I've got to dial everything down and be calm, be thoughtful, or do you have to have a different or a slightly, a different approach than that?
So fear plays an important role. It's an obvious mechanism that tells you something is wrong and, you know, kicks in when it needs to kick in. But it can also be a devil's advocate and do a wrong thing, too.
Mm.
So I've seen people use fear as an excuse, too. And, you know, some of these expeditions are 6 to 8 weeks. Right? This is a long time.
Yes.
So people start to psych themselves out. They start to see, like, bad weather. They start to see, like, avalanches. They start to, like, remember, you know, hey.
How do you control that? Because you can't control the weather systems. You can't control how the mountain's going to behave that day. So the thing you can control is what goes off in here.
Yeah, you've got to have, you know, a really strong focus and a mental, mental fortitude that keeps your focus, you know, where it should be, which is, you know, on the objective. Now, weather is just a wild card. So, you know, that reading is all over the place. But I've seen people, you know, start to spread fear about, you know, the weather looks bad and it keeps looking bad and there'll be no summit. And, you know, they start to talk themselves out of a summit almost. And they start to remember an anniversary back home and how they got to get home. And then they start to develop illnesses. And suddenly, like, you know, their head's not here.
Yeah.
And when their head's not here, they're not here.
So, Doc,
they're going home.
When speaking of fear, so part of your training as a doctor is, you know, I guess they call it a bedside manner, but it's really psychology. If you think about it, it's like it's pretty much getting into a patient's head and then allowing them to let you do your job. So, how much of that do you use when you're guiding someone or instructing or helping someone on a tour? How much of that do you actually use when it comes to what Vanessa was talking about? People who might psych themselves out or get afraid or freak out or something like that.
A ton. I think most of what we do is coaching. Bucket load, large amount. I think motivation and addressing fear is fundamental to what people have to face. And you know, the physical part of it you can manage. The mental part of it is something that's you have to kind of coax people into believing in themselves and finding that calm and translating that to success. Right. And I think that it probably represents most of what we do as a guide to get people to their objective and to enjoy where they are. And you know, not just objective, but process. And you know, the whole trip is kind of more important to me than just the summit. Yeah. And I trying to relate that to people is really, really difficult. And when you can get through it and people identify their fear and their weaknesses and they overcome that, they're hugely successful.
So, Doctor, before you go, as a physician, and Vanessa has given me the impression that every time she's summited, she's learned something, she's faced something different. Have you approached it in a similar way? Has high altitude mountaineering taught you any medical lessons? Have you found things that you probably wouldn't have found had you stayed closer to sea level?
Well, sure. I mean, it's like any experience. The more experience you have in a variety of settings, the more knowledge you gain. Either traveling at a high altitude or dealing with folks who have illnesses at high altitude, it just creates a whole different avenue for learning. And I mean, I'm always shocked at what I see and hear from people, like all the time. And it's kind of never ending.
So let me ask both of you this. This will be my last question. Okay. So you both are extraordinarily passionate about this. It's evident. Okay. And you're both proficient. And what I'd like to know is, what can you tell me from your perspective, why should anybody do this?
Go ahead, Vanessa. Knock yourself out.
This is where you say ladies first, right?
Why so?
Why should anybody do this? So I think, first of all, I never really advocate doing this per se. I like using mountaineering as a metaphor more than anything else.
Okay.
But in terms of taking one more step, but I do think people should get outside of their comfort zone. And have more self-belief, knowing that they always have a safety net. The safety net is all the knowledge, skills, and experience that they've ever acquired in life that can actually help them pivot and do something different, because you can always go back. But what lies ahead is unknown. So taking that knowledge, skills, and experience allows you to pivot, take that, you know, not that much risk that you think it is, because you can always go back, but trying something different, you never know what you'll discover.
You're up next, Doc.
Doc?
That's a hard one to beat.
I know. Doc's like, what she said. No, go ahead, Doc. Go ahead. Why should anyone do this?
Well, I think that if we internalize it and ask ourselves why we do it, this is what I've done for almost my entire life. And I'm passionate about it. My life revolves around being in the mountains. And when you come to it as an older adult, or just even as an adult, why I think people come to it from all different directions. One is a challenge. And I think I see a lot of people who just want to experience something different. That comfort zone that we live in does need to be challenged, I think. And the mountains are definitely one way to challenge it. To step out of your comfort zone into the box that you've never stepped into before, it's super valuable as a growing process, as a tool. Being in places that are just absolutely stunning and locations you'll never go to again, probably. Some of us make our living in those environments, and they're super valuable. To me, it's how I live my life, and how I'd like others to live their lives too, in touch with their surroundings and engaging.
Doctor, all right. Thank you.
Very
and
cool.
Vanessa, I mean, it's fabulous to have the pair of you on at the same time.
Yeah.
Dr. Alarorum, thank you so much for your time. Vanessa O'Brien, a superstar of the world's mountains. That's it, Chuck.
Are we out of show?
We are done.
I believe we have summited.
We have. That's the easy bit, apparently.
Yes, and now we got to get down. That won't happen on camera. And then what will happen is I'll die of a heart attack at the top of this mountain. Okay? Everybody else will descend. And then they have to leave me up here because you can't take your dead with you.
He's got such a complex.
You ain't going to die out there, bro.
All right. Thank you, Doc. Thank you.
That famous bedside manner just got brought
forward.
See,
that's why he's a god. He's encouraging me even now. He's
there
like,
you go.
You're not going to die. You're not going to die up here, bro. You're not going to die.
Come out to the Tetons. We'll get you up the Grand Teton, buddy.
All right. You got it.
All right. Meanwhile, on Magic Mountain. Right. If this show has inspired you, I am a happy person because these two people have been awesome. Right, I've been Gary O'Reilly. Who are you?
I'm still Chuck Nice.
Yes, he is. I can
firmly
vouch
on
for
the
that.
Ground, Chuck Nice.
Yes, and this has been Playing with Science, and we'll catch you very, very soon, I'm sure.
Justin, and so good. Thousands of spring deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save big today on new arrivals from Kate Spade, New York, Nike, Sam Edelman, Free People, and Madewell, starting at only $30. Great brands and great prices on dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and more. So rack your look and get first dibs on spring styles you want now from just $30 at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.